Good morning, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to it. This is Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. I'm your host, Matthew Barnaby. Joining me today, my co-host, good friend, Bet99 guru, well, a horse guru that cost me $1,000 last time we went to the horses. We'll get it back at one point, but he won't be allowed out for a while because he's having a baby he's not having a baby. His wife is having the baby, I hope. Also, a PGA pro, we are going to talk free agency, how crazy it was, and obviously, the GOAT just teeing off for the 150th Open at St. Andrews. Rob Conway, welcome to Unfiltered. How are you?
I'm doing well. Barney, how are you, my man? It's the Open Championship. I was up earlier this morning watching it, then fell back asleep a little bit after... McIlroy had a bogey. I was kind of tracking him a little bit. My one-and-done league, which I'm in first place. I might be 2 weeks late, but he's the only guy left I have to pick. So it's Xander Schauffele for me this week, and he's off to a nice little start as well, 4 under par so far.
Yeah, playing well. McIlroy playing well. The course is really gettable today. Not a lot of wind, no rain. That's the defense. I'll get into it a little later. I have played St. Andrews before. Unbelievable course. Just to go over there and play is pretty, pretty remarkable. Are you ready for baby life? Because you're like a world traveler. You and Kimmy are, you know, you're in Hawaii. You go to Jamaica for bachelor parties. You do the waste management with me. You like to get after it a little bit. You know, life's changing very quickly, right? You know, life is ending pretty well.
Yes. For an extended period of time, at least. And that being about 18 years. But, I'm looking forward to it. At this point, we are any day now. I mean, it's August 3rd, the due date, so we still got a little bit of time. But at this point, I've been told by the doctors that if the baby comes, it's fine. It doesn't matter now. And just a waiting game. But, yeah, we like to find ourselves about town. So that's also why I'm like, let's get the baby going, figure this all out for a couple months, and then, boom, we're off.
Yeah, I think you guys are going to be cool parents where you guys are going to be sitting in pubs with the stroller right there. Has Kimmy went through the horny stage yet, the baby bumps, like where you rub up against her and she just like, let's go upstairs. You're like, I don't really want to touch the baby here.
Didn't know that was a thing. No, I'm just kidding.
No. Well, smooth transition. Let's get into yesterday. The most money ever spent in free agency before yesterday, 2018, $790 million in contracts put out there. Yesterday, $919 million. We know it's a crazy time. We know they overpay, but it's the one day you can improve your team without giving up assets. So you do it through money, and we know that you get good players, but you're going to overpay for the most part. What intrigued you most about yesterday, winners, losers, as we go through?
Yeah, I mean, look, right off the bat, you got to be a little bit surprised at where Johnny Gaudreau ended up going to Columbus for less money. Was a bit of a shock. I know he wanted to go home, and Columbus is certainly closer than Calgary. And some people are like, oh, it's not the East Coast and whatever. It's the United States. That's a start. it's a different country. So that's a start there. But for him to end up there, you know, I saw a lot on Twitter, including yourself. It was a bit of a kick in the nuts to Calgary, and I think it was. I don't blame him, but when you're not ending up in a major market like Philly or even though Jersey and the Islanders aren't the Rangers, but still, you're in New York and you're really close to home, it was a bit of a kick in the nuts, I think. I don't blame him. I don't think he meant it that way, but when you do end up there, and I'm surprised it came to that point. Philly, I thought, was the favorite. If they had cap space, they just couldn't figure that out. But I was surprised that he couldn't figure out a way to land in Jersey or the island. And maybe he decided he just didn't want to play for those two teams and ended up in Columbus.
We can go so many different ways with this. Listen, it's a kick in the balls to Calgary. They got a really good hockey team. They got a really good new. You look at the Battle of Alberta and Draisaitl and McDavid now getting Evander Kane to sign there for a few more years at a great cap hit. Calgary did their best. And I always say, you leak the information you want leaked, right? They put it out there that they offered 8 years, $10.5 million. I don't get Columbus. They're not ready to win. It's not a major market. And he has the right to choose anywhere he wants to live. That's his right. But being a Canadian team, a good team, offering you $15 million more dollars, and you turning it down, it just, I don't get it. If you're going home, I get it. If you're going to another contender, I get it. Columbus isn't ready to win now, and they're a ways off from winning. Maybe he signed there because he knows Torts is never going back there, so he's going to stay away from Torts. And that's kind of my analogy. Everyone just signs away from where Torts can be. But Americans don't have the same allure of playing in Canada. I'm a Canadian kid. I don't have many regrets. The one regret I have is not have signed at least for 1 year to play in a Canadian market. But I'm Canadian. I've played with a lot of Americans. It's not the same allure for those guys to play in Canada. It just isn't. And I don't know Johnny. I've met him a few times. I've been to a bar in Columbus. Actually, the last time I saw him was in Columbus at the All-Star game, and he was absolutely smashed at the bar, which was everyone. But it's just not the same allure for an American kid playing in Canada. I just don't get Columbus. I thought it was going to be New Jersey. Great young team. You had a guy like Johnny Hockey, and that catapults you up to probably playing in the playoffs and taking that next step. Columbus just doesn't make sense. But again, you can play anywhere you fucking want. You've earned that right.
Absolutely. You absolutely have earned the right. And, you know, leaving money on the table when we're talking 70 and 85, people, you know, I get it. He's giving up 15, but I mean, he's going to be what, 35 at the end of the contract. He's going to sign a couple more deals. So, you know, by then, how big is the cap from 8 years from now? Maybe he signs another deal that's close to that and doesn't leave as much on the table, but, you know, a 1 or 2 year deal for $20 million by then, who knows? That could be a steal of a contract in 8 years. But so we don't know for sure, but nonetheless, it's in the pocket. I just surprised, like you say, that he couldn't find a market that was in that general area that was a little bit different. And, you know, you say, you know, this team's away from winning. They may never be in 8 years ready to win. They're just, they're, you know, unless they draft really, really, really well and get lucky. And yes, this changes the complexion. Look, you know, being from Toronto and the Toronto Raptors and not having players that want to come here, free agents and players sticking around until really DeMar DeRozan signed a big deal to stay here. And of course they traded him, but then, they don't need to get Kawhi Leonard. But I mean, that kind of changed the narrative that, you know, players don't just want to leave Toronto to go back to the United States. And so I understand where Columbus is saying, yes, we finally got someone. And will this change things? Maybe, but you're still going to have to draft really well, probably fall, you know, not ass backwards, but into a really good goaltender and a couple of nice prospects to hope to really make a run in a really talented Eastern Conference with teams like Toronto that aren't going to be bad in a long time, probably Carolina, Florida, the Islanders are probably going to be good. You know, Pittsburgh might take a step back, maybe Tampa eventually, but you got to find some teams to drop out if you want to pull up in the next couple of years.
Malkin signs back with Pittsburgh, 4 year deal, just over $6 million. Tampa Bay, you knew that Palat was going to be a cap casualty. It looks like he just signs a 5 year deal in New Jersey, about $6 million a year. That was inevitable. They have just way too many good players. And when you have way too many good players and you win 2 Stanley Cups and you go to a cup for a third straight year, you're going to have to make some tough decisions. I don't know if anyone does it better than Julien Brisebois and acts swiftly, lets Palat go, signs Nick Paul, Cirelli, Chernek, and Sergachev. 3 of those guys get 8-year deals. 1 gets a 7-year deal. How impressive what Julian's been able to do in Tampa Bay. They look like they're in it for the long haul again.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they have Vasilevsky, you think that they've got a chance for sure. And the fact that Julien Brisebois, to my knowledge, has not won a GM of the year is shocking. But, you know, you win 60 games and you think, wow, that's not the GM. Well, somebody had to put the team together. But anyway.
It's always like that with Coach of the Year as well.
Yeah, I know. It's always the narrative. Oh, my God, the team that didn't make the playoffs. Eventually, by default, you win 2 cups and go to a third final. You should probably just win. Everyone else should just rescind their nomination. But we'll see how that goes. But the only thing I found yesterday, you include Cirelli, includes Chernak, you know, Trocheck, these deals that are in the 5, 6, 7, 8 year deals for 5 or 6 million. Aren't those the scary contracts to you, Barney? I mean, the $10 million deals for the Gaudreaus or the Matthews or the McDavids, they're guaranteed. You know these players are going to perform. And if it's for $2 or $3 million, you can probably figure a way around it. But you start giving a guy 6 and 7 years at $6 and $7 million. To me, it sounds like we're not really sure if you're a superstar. So here's $35 million, hopefully. Yeah. No, like, and so now if in 2 years, that could be a handcuffed contract, right? I mean, there's the NHL is littered with $5 million deals that people can't move.
I always say when I look at those deals, like the Robert Thomas, 8 times $8.1 million. Robert Thomas is 22 years old. That's a no-brainer. He's a hell of a player. When you're 28, 29, signing 7 and 8 year deals, and one of my buddies, a good friend, he's a great New York Ranger, like huge New York Ranger fan, like super fan. That's how I know him from when I played in the Rangers. And he kind of, you know, jock sniffed for a while, and he actually played on the PGA Tour for a bit. He's played 3 U.S. Opens.
Like, it sounds like you're jock sniffing around him, if I know who you're talking about. Well, now.
It might be a little bit both. It might be a little bit. So, Chris Nalen, if you're listening out there, I'm jock sniffing you as well. But he's like, what do you think of Trocheck? And I'm like, listen, he's a good player, really good player. Loved when he went to Carolina. He's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a player in Florida. This is a contract that it just screams buyout in the last few years. And a lot of those, like you said, those $5, $6 million, you're not a superstar at $5, $6 million anymore. That's just a good player. So as they get up in age, these all just scream buyout to me when you're 6 and 7 year deals on those kind of numbers. I want to do winners and losers. And I live in Ottawa. It's been a tough ride here. Obviously, yeah. Melnyk passing away this year. Wasn't a very popular figure here, but listen, he brought hockey, and he's because of him, it's still here. And I think that's something to be said. Pierre Dorion, you know, like him or hate him, moves that he's made some really bad trades. Drafted really, really well with Trent Mann. What an offseason. The complexion. I don't know if there's a more exciting team to watch going forward. We're always going to have Edmonton. Anytime you have McDavid, Toronto, you have Matthews. But for an exciting young team that looks like they've went like from bottom tier to like mid tier really quickly, DeBrincat, Giroux, Talbot, I'm not sure of, but this is a young team that already has Tkachuk and Norris and Batherson. This is going to be a fun team to watch. I still think they need a D, and Talbot can't be worse than fucking Matt Murray. I mean, the plethora of injuries that this guy dealt with at $6 million. And we'll get into the Toronto Maple Leafs because I know you're from Toronto, and I know there's probably a sign behind you that says, go Leafs, go, and here's our parade route. But how good has this offseason been for Ottawa?
So good. And, you can't help but feel positive when you think about what the Ottawa Senators have been able to do. Bringing in Claude Giroux is not Claude Giroux from 5 years ago, but he's still going to be a huge piece. He's going to be an important piece in the locker room, I would imagine. That has a key part to it. Local kid as well is always going to help. He's going to be excited to be there. He's going to want to play right throughout his contract just because of the fact that he's at home. And he wants to succeed, with these young guys. So, you know, that's always a key piece. And then, of course, bringing in DeBrincat for basically nothing, getting rid of the Murray contract while only retaining 25% was a success. And you know, the draft picks or whatever, we'll see. But they've done quite well with them thus far. The Tkachuk, Stützle, Shabbat, all of these are draft picks from Ottawa, and they've done quite well with them. So, obviously, they're doing something right there. Pierre Dorion's been through the ringer in that city. I mean, he's been out the door how many times? I can't even imagine. And here he is now having maybe the offseason, definitely of his career, but best props in the NHL this offseason. And good for him and good for that town because, like you said, you know, with Eugene Melnyk passing away, obviously not, you know, the best time in the franchise because at that time you think question marks of where will this team be and, you know, the LeBreton Flats and we need a new arena. And now the guy who's kind of held it all together despite – maybe not everyone loving him, like you said, kept the team in the city. He's gone, and it's great to see his daughters. They were there on the draft floor as well. Looks like they're involved and interested. So it looks like Ottawa is going to be a good hockey team, and hopefully a good hockey team in the city of Ottawa for an extended period of time. So, yeah, I think it's been great.
I've heard that in any which way, when they do sell the team, and they're going to make a shitload of money, these two young girls, and good for them. Their dad has set them up very, very well. I wish I was part of that family and could be involved. But I've heard that they do, in his name, want to retain 10% of the team any which way, to not have a say, obviously. And then we get it down to LeBreton Flats because it's a must. I will be there tonight at the Luke Bryan Blues Fest. I will be at that concert, but exactly where the new rink, a new arena should be going. I drove past the CTC yesterday. Man, is it disgusting. It is just, the outside is just fucking nasty. Like, throw a paint job on the thing, guys. Yeah. This is the NHL. Like, I can't imagine coming from North Dakota or coming from Penn State and having your arena just so beautiful and then coming like, throw some paint on the thing. That's all you need. Throw a couple signs up. It's absolutely disgusting. So, you know, I can't wait for it to go down there. That's when I'm waiting to buy season tickets. As exciting as this team is, I'm still not going out to Canada because it's too hard to get to. But this team is really turning its corner. My losers, my winners were Ottawa, Detroit, Stevie Yzerman, I think, really accelerating while having a lot of guys on one-year deals, two-year deals, setting up for what's going to happen in a couple years. My losers, Calgary, obviously it's kicking the balls with speed skates. When you lose a guy like Johnny Gaudreau for nothing and takes less money, but your lease.
Yikes.
Are they, how much further away, or do you think they're further away? And listen, I know the goaltending carousel has, it's not electric out there, right? Like, a lot of guys jumping from teams to teams, and Talbot, and, you know, Fleury's a guy that's a little bit older. A lot of these guys, there's not like that superstar. There wasn't Markstrom coming onto the market that you could jump on. And there's very few Vasilevskis out there.
There's five or six goalies in the NHL. There's five or six.
And I think if you look at Colorado and you look at Francouz and Kemper, that they're Stanley Cup champions. Neither are barn burners. You know, like, Kemper goes and signs for 5 years, 5.25. Good contract for him. I don't know if I'd be willing to commit that to Darcy Kemper with the injuries and what I've seen. But Matt Murray, I mean, he's missed like 50 games in the last 2 years. Couple conkies. And, you know, when Ottawa's desperately trying to get rid of that $6 million deal, they trade up, or they have a trade in place to give their seventh pick to go down to the 16th pick with the Buffalo Sabres. That's when you know what their belief in Matt Murray is. And Toronto, with no Jack Campbell, that kind of fell apart. I think everyone last year in the middle of the year couldn't envision this team not re-signing Jack Campbell. He goes to Edmonton. What's your take on where the Leafs are? With how disastrous was this offseason? Mikheyev leaving, we knew that was going to happen. When you have so much money built in at the top, but where do you have Toronto? I said this yesterday. I think Ottawa wins a cup before Toronto. I don't think they're going to be a better team. I have in the Atlantic, I have it Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Boston, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo, and Montreal. That's how I have it this year in terms of power rankings for me. But I don't think Toronto gets out of the first round again. Now, that could change, and then maybe Matt Murray finds his game. But I don't have any more belief in Toronto, or I have a lot less belief than I did a year ago at this date.
I don't think I have any less belief because I didn't really trust Jack Campbell all that much. I mean, this is a goaltender that had never, you know, taken the reins of a team. And I guess Mrazek at that time seemed like a nice piece as well. And, you know, was going to be a solid backup when they signed that contract. That didn't work out either. That's the problem, Barney. When you talk about the Leafs and Kyle Dubas and the goaltending situation, look, this team is a fantastic team. They're going to make the playoffs. They're not going to have a 30-point.
No.
I mean, they're 40 points clear of Ottawa. They're a much better team regardless of DeBrincat and Giroux. That's fine. But you say, oh, well, you couldn't sign Campbell, you know, because you weren't sure about 5 years. Fine. There's no Vasilevskiy, Markstrom. That's this year. They've had this team for 5 years now. Austin Matthews' era has been going on for some time. And the best goaltender they've ever had no longer plays on the team because they didn't want to give him a contract in Frederik Andersen. And that's fine because he didn't perform for you in the playoffs. You can make that decision if you want. But you've never had a backup plan. You've never drafted a goaltender. You've never developed a goaltender. You've never gotten a young goaltender to come over and develop. I mean, there's just no excuse at this point in your tenure as GM or as management to say, well, this is the best option we had. It can't be in your fifth or sixth year that you're still looking for Matt Murray to roll the dice. That's the problem, right? It's not that, yes, this year, this may be the best. And look, Samsonov's a nice piece. He has, you know, he looked terrible down the stretch. You get yanked like every game. But before that, you know, he's a solid, who knows? You know, it's another one-year deal, and maybe in 7 months they're thinking about giving him a five-year contract. But I just don't understand why, and this doesn't just apply to the Leafs because there's only five or six good goaltenders, but, and maybe you can answer this, Barney, because you know more about it than I do. But if you look at the NFL, teams will bend over backwards to draft a quarterback that they know probably will suck because they just hope maybe there's a chance he'll be good.
And we got the MILF Hunter now, so I'm fine. If he never plays well again, we got the MILF Hunter.
That's right. It's true. But why don't teams draft why isn't it mandated by the Toronto Maple Leafs or other teams that don't have a goaltender? Find me someone in the first two rounds that you think is good. And if it doesn't work, who cares? How many first and second round picks never play in the NHL? Tons. Why are goalies not selected? And you can say, well, we're not really sure if they're going to be any good. Well, they're definitely not going to be any good if you don't have them on your team.
Especially later in the first round when you're not sure if the player is going to be that fucking good anyway.
Yeah.
But there's a clear reason why. If you're Kyle Dubas this year, you're not drafting. You're not drafting. What's that?
You're not drafting a 5-year project. Is that what you're going to say?
Exactly, because these guys don't know if they're going to be there in 5 years.
I guess.
You know, these guys aren't drafting the next coming if they believe that that's their guy. Because there's goalies that come in every draft, and that you need a goalie or something. There's going to be some good ones, and you have to believe in some. But these guys, their shelf life, they don't know if they're going to be there, and they're not drafting a guy that they might ever see. They want a guy that they can get within a year or 2 years, not five, because there's very few goalies that can step in within a couple of years and play, because it's the hardest and most pressured position, and the difference between junior and NCAA to trust a face in the NHL. So that's the reason why. There's very few. Lou Lamoriello's a guy, you know, when he drafted Marty Brodeur. He's a guy because he knows. He knows when he was in New Jersey, he's not going anywhere.
Right.
And I think you need like a David Poyle. You need those guys to be able, guys that are so solidified in their position, or guys with long-term deals as GMs. So that's the reason why. But yes, it is dumbfounding. Leafs, I haven't checked the odds yet today to see where we're at as Stanley Cup. I guarantee they're still number two or number three because the Toronto money, and that's the way it always is. It's overvalued, but they're no better. Pretty well, Kyle Dubas has hung his hat and his job that Matt Murray's the guy with Samsonov, and he might be. He was a first rounder to Washington, but this is his last kick of the can, right? There's no chance. If they don't get past the first round, that him and Keith are still coach and GM of the Leafs.
You would imagine so that this is it. And perhaps the biggest decision that has been made in Leafs recent history will end up being, or the worst one, not the worst, because you know I don't think Kyle Dubas done a bad job, but maybe the one that's cost them the most is the decision to lose Lou Lamoriello and Mark Hunter for a young GM who, granted, as a nice team and has put together pieces, and there's times Michael Bunning last year, Kosh last year, but you know, when those negotiations had to be done, starting with Nylander, I would have much rather Lou Lamoriello in the basement with William Nylander talking in his thick accent, scaring the bejeebas out of him than Kyle Dubas. But nonetheless, we'll see how Toronto, my other winner quickly, cause I know we got lots to talk about, but Carolina, I love their little moves that they made adding, you know, the likes of Brent Burns and you know, just getting some name value. That team, you know, they won their division. They don't need to add to be a better team. They need to add to be a Stanley Cup winner. And adding names like that, I thought was a really nice job as well to put them along with the younger players like the Ahos and the Teravainens. And what Rod Brind'Amour has done there has been fantastic.
Yeah, they're a fun team to watch. And Brent Burns, not the best defensively, but man, offensively, like you lose Tony DeAngelo. But to gain Brent Burns offensively, what he can do on that power play with the amount of guys offensively that they already have young guys. I mean, these guys are set. These guys are just tinkering now. They're not
just
changing.
Add some
up.
Swagger too. I think add some swagger, a player like that. You know, he's in a Kit Kat commercial. He knows what he's doing, and he just adds that little bit for those guys that, because Carolina, it's a smaller market. They play a style of hockey that's not the most flashy in the world. And then you get a guy like Brent Burns. Guys, we're good, man. Let's go. Like we're better than Tampa Bay. You know he's got, I think, that swagger that's going to help.
We're going to see many more signings come in the next few days, and guys will be changing teams. We know that. But $919 million, a record, and it happens every day. It's usually Canada Day craziness. This year it was July 13th, maybe because it's the 13th. They lose their fucking minds, but you do improve your team a lot of the times. Love Ottawa. Buffalo, that division. And we'll go through many more teams. You can't get to all 32. Off to the open, 150th. I've been telling everyone I shot 79 at St. Andrews. I was wrong, and it's been on this card. I shot 80. I don't know why I've been telling everyone that I shot 79.
Because 79 is like 8 shots better than 80 when you say it.
Well, it is. It sounds so much better. I shot 79 at St. Andrews. Yeah. When I played it, it was 69, 33 yards. I was actually a 12 handicap when I shot it, but when I played it, it was literally 85 and sunny. No wind.
Yeah.
Beautiful out. What a course. What a course to walk. I just love how every hole has a name. I birdied only one. I birdied number 11, the par 3, 172 yards. That was the only birdie, and I doubled the road hole. Fuck, was that tough. Taking it, having that line to take it over to the left side. But the open, pretty good weather to start. Not a lot of wind. Always intriguing. We always see some names that we don't know at the top. First round, second round, and then usually the cream rises to the top. We got McIlroy up there, -5 through 17. Young, Cam Young, 8-under, 64. Smith at 5-under. Some really good players. Tiger just tees off, makes a believe. I haven't seen. I think it's a double bogey on one after hitting it, striping it right down the middle and landing in a divot. But what are your expectations for the GOAT? I have McIlroy this week. I have Cam Smith this week, and I have a unit on the GOAT because I cannot not watch a golf tournament without betting Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I have been to the Open at St. Andrews the last time Tiger Woods won. Not the last time I was there. Zach Johnson, I believe, won the last time I was there. I was 18. I had won a poker tournament online. I got a free trip from Golden Palace Casino. I don't even think they exist anymore. And
Golden Palace, isn't that the one where they used to pay people to streak and shit?
Yeah. So I won a tournament.
So you were
the
streaker, weren't you?
that's how I got the free trip to the Open. But my dad's Scottish, so he's from Edinburgh. So we flew. The tournament was in England. We did that for a couple days, and then we went over. And my uncle lives in Fife, or my dad's uncle, I should say, lives in Fife, which is where St. Andrews is. And we went to the Open, and we golfed a little bit there. We couldn't golf any of the good golf courses because they're all booked up. But they have a college course we played there. So I was there for the Open. It is an interesting track, to say the least. You've played it. To watch it, if you're watching it now, it's straight out and straight back. It's literally just like a
nine
track.
Holes out, nine holes back.
And so you don't get inside the ropes. There is no ropes. There's you could hit a half sand wedge from one side of the golf course to the other. And so it's interesting. Like, you really kind of have to sit in the stands and stay in one spot. Went to the road hole area as well. You know, it's just such a cool place to be at. And but it is unique from the sense of you don't get people surrounding the greens or anything like that. Everyone's far away because it's not far away, but like out of the way because it's circular. That's all you have. So it's a really cool place to go. I suggest everyone to go and watch or play there if you can. I would love to play there myself when I go back. Hopefully the Open's not booking up all the tee times next time I head there. But expectations for Tiger. This is a golf course he knows. It's funny. They were showing him warming up in the bunker. And I'm like, in 2000, he didn't even hit it in a bunker.
Yeah, I know. Not one. There's 115 bunkers or 112 bunkers.
Yeah, in four rounds, not one. So, I mean, he knows how to whip his way around this course. It's one of those courses like Augusta that if he's healthy enough and striping it okay, he can play at it. We saw Tom Watson in the British Open almost win, go to a playoff. Greg Norman a few years ago as well, over 50. Darren Clark was an older player that won recently. This is the tournament, other than Augusta, just because of his history there, that he can win. Do I have expectations this week? No, probably not, just because of his health. But he's never going to age out of this tournament, really, at least not till he's about 55, 60.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still have some hope for him here. It is a course he loves. He says it's his favorite course on the world, in the world. So we'll see. He's hitting it great, driving the green on 18, which is, you know, the hardest thing in the world to do. But nonetheless, he's there. We'll see if he makes the cut, and just more matter of, can he walk the course for 4 days? I think that's the biggest question for him.
Yeah. One in 18, pretty benign holes. You just go out, hit an iron off of one. You don't even need to hit a driver today to get to. Guys are hitting 18 green with three woods, and some are knocking it over that I've seen. So the walk is the biggest thing for him. This is the easiest walk. It's not an undulated course. It's a little off kilter when you walk through the fairways, like anything is in Scotland or Ireland. I got a great story when I went over there. I went with 12 guys and we played, I don't know, I think 14 rounds in like 10 days, 9 days. We had an absolute ball. But, you know, the thing I didn't know when you go over there is caddies are degenerates, like true degenerates over there, which fit in great with our group. But I'm playing with a buddy of mine, Brad Arthur. And Brad is probably like a 19 or 20 handicap. And he tees one up on number one, and he hits driver, and he hits it right into the shit. Tees another one up, hits it right. And we're having this all videoed because we get the videotape at the end of the round, and we watch it and keepsake. And it's part of the $1,300 experience of staying at the hotel and playing. They really bend you over and stick it in hard and ask you to touch your toes.
Got free tees, though. They gave you free tees.
Yeah, free tees. Yes. And it's cool because it's a park, right? Like, people are walking as you're playing with their dogs and their kids, and you see it all the way around. But the best is we're not even halfway down the fairway, and the caddies bet on you. Like, they're taking a team, and they're like, Brad, what's your handicap? And Brad goes, oh, I'm a 12. He goes, not in Scotland. You're more like a 36, lad.
Yeah.
Fucking great. And then he turns to him. He's like, do you think we can find my ball? He's like, Lassie couldn't find that if it was wrapped in bacon, Brad. Fucking great. So, yeah, we played. Brad shot about 180 as a 12 handicap that day and just got busted up.
Did you have to prove that you were an 18 handicap? I believe you're supposed to be an 18 or better to play there, right?
His handicap, we all carried our cards.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we had to show them. I don't remember that per se, but I remember just going out after the round and we were laughing and whatever. And we took the guys out and, you know, we had teed off around noon and it got to like, you know, 5 o'clock by the time we got off the course, and we had a beer right up the street at the Rustix Hotel. And then we went out, we took all our caddies out. It was like 1 a.m. We're like, don't you fucking guys have to like go home to your families? They're like, guys, this is Scotland. If we're home by Monday, we're good. And this was on a Friday. We're like, all right, little different way of life. The expectations of family life, little bit different.
Pretty cool when you're there, because the city is literally, I mean, it's not a city. The town of Fife or St. Andrews is right there. And like 18 goes up and you see it. If you're watching it, you'll see the kind of hotels behind, but then up the side. And like right in the town is a pub and Ladbrokes, which is a bookie shop. It's just great. It's just beautiful. Like, to just, even if you went there when, like you say, when the Open wasn't on, but it's a cool little a town that has just this unique kind of experience that you don't really get anywhere else in the world.
Who else do you like? Game suits well for not only Lynx. I mean, like you said, Shoffley's won twice in a row. He's off to a great start. You got to stay out of the bunkers. We know that. But anyone's game, and I want to get to the Liv really quick. I'm kind of over this whole Liv battle back and forth and Tiger ripping them. Like, not everyone has $1 billion like Tiger. I don't begrudge, and I've said this before, guys that are taking 125, 150, or 20 million, whatever it may be. Like, I get some of his points. Like, why do you want to practice if you're getting this guaranteed money and it's not about, you know, wins anymore? You know, flying on that jet is pretty fucking cool for anyone that didn't see it. That Liv jet and Pat Perez. I wish more people, and I think you said it before, would just say it's about the fucking money. It's about the money.
It's about the jet. It's about the jet. Like, you know what I mean? It's about the fact that I'm going to get to do stuff I can't otherwise do. You know, John Rahm said it. And again, I'm not for the Liv, and I'm just for, like you say, it's about the money, and it's totally fine. And it's about the lifestyle that you want to have that needs you to be able to have that, do that, is to have the money. And, you know, Rahm said, like, what's my life's not going to change a lot with $400 million. And you laughed at that. And I mentioned it to my chiropractor, who's a friend of mine who golfs. And I said to him, like, that's what Rahm said. And I was just on the show with you. And that was a few weeks ago. Yeah. And he said, Rob, the difference between what John Rahm is saying and $400 million is, do you want a NetJets subscription or do you want to own a jet? Because that's the difference, right? And so like Phil Mickelson wants to own a jet, or maybe DJ wants to just have his own jet, or not be a NetJet subscriber. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's the difference. And yes, it's a private jet to private jet, but it's a different lifestyle. And you saw the jet that they're on. That isn't a private jet that we saw when we were in Phoenix. That was
no.
Those are amazing.
Those were amazing.
Like a different beast.
And I'm not going to lie, you and I, we'll take the subscription. We'll take that jet. I almost had 25 hours once because I almost had a hole in one and I left it this far. I think I've told you that. I was like that far at the Mark Messier tournament in New York. And I was like, 25 hours on a private jet. That would be pretty fucking cool. That's the only way to get to the Mile High Club. Like, I've thought about it before. I've talked about it with Rhonda. You know, we're planning the overnight to go over to Europe, but it's too small. I don't think I could. I don't think I could get the little guy up.
You'll have to take turns. You go.
Oh, cramp. Yeah, no. The only way is renting a private jet one day to get to the Mile High Club. But yeah, it's completely out of the realm. Like the money that these guys they don't have to compete. Like that's why I respect Pat Perez. And I think you sent me a text a couple weeks ago. You're like, man, I appreciate his honesty. He goes, I've been on tour since 98. I don't want to fucking travel. I don't want to play every week.
Exactly.
And they're paying me a shitload of money. And I'm Pat Perez.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. He was like, look, I've been on tour since, I don't even know. He said before Matt Wolf was even born. And, you know, traveling and doing that grind. And he's made a lot of money. And, you know, he's got an entire room full of Michael Jordans and so that's fine. He has a great life, but he's saying, I don't want to do it anymore. I just don't want to. And I can retire or I can do this, which is basically retiring and make $50 million or whatever he got offered. And that's the smart decision for Pat Perez. If you're a DJ and you care about legacy, it's not, but he obviously does it and that's okay.
Yeah.
No, that's totally okay.
Yeah. And it's hit Tiger. Like, he's a billionaire and I know 2 billion's more than 1 billion, but he's never going to spend close. Like at 10%, he's making $100 million a year just on interest. That's at 10%. And I know the market's down a little bit now, but over time it makes about 12%. And his sponsors probably said, listen, we're paying you $100 million a year anyways.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want you there. So that he's in a different position than all these other golfers. John Rahm, McIlroy, they're probably two that you could be like, $400 million, that's the difference. But they're looking for legacy, and they're not going to spend that money either way. Yeah. DJ doesn't really like golf. DJ would rather be with Paulina on a boat fucking drinking and partying. And now he's got another $125 million before he wins a few tournaments with some B-listers that he's playing against.
Yeah.
Right?
Brendan Grace doubled his career earnings in like one event. So
yeah, exactly. He made $89 million in his first 15 years. And now he's going to be on the back nine of his career, you know, after the next 5 years. But I love what the RNA has done. And I'm curious to see what they do going forward, just about qualifying for the Open and US Open and the Masters, because we know they're going to try to stick it to these guys hard. I love what the RNA did this week, where they stick all these guys up in like the first tee times. So no one in the States or Canada can watch these guys unless you're an idiot like me and up at 4 a.m. But they're like, here, stick it. No one's going to watch you play it that early in the morning to start.
Greg Norman, thanks, but no thanks. We don't need you at the Champions Dinner, whatever they were doing, which is John Daly's getting invited, which I love John Daly, but he's getting invited with all the stuff. He's like showing up with his son and with Hooters on. And
Hooters bag. I love it.
Love it. And he's getting invited to Champions Dinner. And you're not. That's a tough one for Greg Norman, I'm sure.
Who else do you like? Who else game do you like that can – because I think you have to be strategic. Obviously, you have to stay out of the bunkers. But if you can bomb it on some of these and get close, Rory, there's a lot of gettable holes.
The way he drives the ball, he's got the – I mean, he's the favorite. Anyway, he's plus 1,000 to start. I think he's like plus 450 now live being off to such a great start. But, you know, the way he drives the ball and just there isn't a lot of trouble to get into outside of the bunkers. And if you can navigate your way around that, he doesn't have to hit 125-yard wedge very often, which is his nemesis most times because he drives the ball so great. Xander Schauffele is obviously the hottest golfer in the world. You know, he's off to a decent start as well. You know, I believe the year that Tiger almost won, he was right there as well when Molinari ended up winning the Open. His game translates. But you got to like the Europeans, John Rahm, for sure. He's played this style, you know, growing up. He would have been going around Europe probably playing courses like this. A Tyrrell Hatton. Maybe a Shane Lowry who won a few years ago at Port Rush. So there's other guys out there. It's a wide open tournament for sure. I guess the thing that I was kind of going through is like what player would make the biggest impact for winning. I think the two are Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. Will a guy from LIV win a major? And of course, Rory McIlroy, who's basically riding in on a white horse right now for the PGA Tour, to win at the home of golf. Would be a fitting way to end the major championship season for the PGA Tour.
Yeah, RNA and PGA Tour are just praying for any of the big guys that stayed on the PGA Tour to win. That's huge. John Rahm, obviously, that would be huge for him. But we'll recap this all next week. Going to be a great tournament. I think they are going to go really, really low because
that's the forecast.
Yeah, the forecast does not look bad at all. Wind is not going to be that big an issue, especially in the morning for most of these groups. So if you're on the right side of it, no rain in the forecast. That's massive. That's its usual way to defend against this course is rain and wind. And if it's not blowing at 25 miles an hour and the rain isn't coming sideways, certainly it's going to be playing into that. I think under 20 under or more is going to win it this week. I think it was set at 17 for most books out there. But Rob, thanks for joining me. My co-host was at Bet99, PGA Pro. He had it going on the other day. And then the snap hooks, I believe, started.
No. I'm lefty, so snap hooks are right. Then I started to hit it left.
Oh, you never hit it left.
Because it's golf. It's the stupidest sport in the world. That's why. Yeah, I was blocking it left because I was trying so hard not to hook. It was a disaster. But I played okay. Yeah.
Only sport where the ball is standing still. It's right sitting there. And you just have to fucking hit it.
And do the same thing over and over.
I'm getting fitted for clubs this week. And I'm going, can't believe I'm saying it, to graphite irons and regular shafts. So going for a whole new bag. Barney's Bets, boosted odds. I'm going Rory. I'm going Smith. And I do have a little on Tiger, but Tiger does not look like – I just hope he makes the cut.
Yeah, me too.
Golf's better when he makes the cut and he's there on Saturday and Sunday. Favorite athlete, I'll say it again, of all time is Tiger Woods. There's no one even close. Thanks for being on with me, Rob. Subscribe and like this podcast, Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. Also, July 23rd, Riverworks, after the Chicklets Cup. First live show with my buddies there. Going to be an awesome, awesome week. It's also my daughter's 21st birthday. So we'll be taking her out at 12:01 on the 23rd in the morning. Her first drink she's ever, ever had. Just like Dad. Never had one before 21. Going to be a time. Hold it back, Rob. Thanks, buddy. And bye, hopefully Rob. I talk to you live before the baby arrives, if not right after. But wish to me the best, and thanks for coming on, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the golf this weekend.
Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. That's Rob Conway. I'm Matthew Barnaby. Have a great week. And remember, my favorite team, New York Jets. But my favorite team always is the one that covers. Cheers.